Welcome back, guys. Welcome back. Welcome back to another episode of Almost Well First. If it's your first time here, welcome. Welcome. Always excited for new listeners. This is just a book podcast where I usually talk about books. I know last week I did a video game, but whatever. I just talk about stories, really. But yeah, thanks for tuning in. I know I say it every week, but thanks for all your nice words, and I love hearing from you guys that you enjoy tuning in every other week, and it's really fun sitting down and talking about stories, really. I feel like I can't say just books anymore since I did a whole almost 2-hour episode on Red Dead, but just talking about stories. And so I think I teased it last week, but this week we have a part 2 of an ongoing series. This week we're going to tackle Saga Volume 2, so you know what that means. He's back.
Yay, yay. I'm back.
The boy is back.
They couldn't keep me away. I heard some people were, you know, hoping I would come back soon, and here I am clamoring for me, you know, so I'm just gracing the podcast with my presence again. I'm excited. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about this. It's been a minute. We had to, like, refresh ourselves on the story and everything, so it was kind of fun diving back in, getting back into the saga mode.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm stoked to get into this one.
Hell yeah. So, I guess, like always, let's just hop right back in, man.
Yeah, let's do it.
So, if you guys remember, let me preface and say, if you haven't listened to, I think it was episode 4, where we talked about Saga Volume 1, pause now, go back and listen to it.
Yeah.
I mean, this is it's an ongoing story, so you can't just read number 2 without reading number 1. You're not going to know what's going on, you know?
Yeah.
So
go back and hear the first podcast, but especially if you haven't read any of it yet, it's like, please just get it, read it.
Yes,
find
please.
It on, like, read it on your Kindle, buy the comic book, support this kind of story, you know?
Yes.
Just get yourself caught up, because I'd hate to just spoil it here for you, unless that's what you want to do. If you're just the type that you just want to just hear it from somebody else, then,
yeah.
All right, welcome. Episode 2.
Let's get to yeah, it. Yeah, we're in it. But yeah, so just a little recap of where Volume 1 ended, just because it's like you were saying, it's been a minute since we've been here. But
yeah.
So let's see. End of the last episode, what happened? Not episode, end of the last issue.
And the last episode of this, but yeah.
Well, let's see. So, you know, we've got Alana and Marco. Those are our two main characters, and they're on the run. Let's see, end of the book. Let's see, Marco's grandparents showed up out of nowhere.
Yeah, just showed up on the ship.
Yeah, they just appeared.
Mm-hmm.
So we're dealing with the in-laws, and then when the parents showed up, the mom banished their ghost girl, Isabel.
Yeah.
We don't know what that's about.
Does that happen at the end of the last one, or does that happen right? That happens
before. Yeah, at the end. Remember, because she just, like, zapped her, and then she was gone.
At that time, we don't know it's banishment.
Yeah.
At that time, we're like, oh, no, she's dead?
Yeah.
I thought she was already dead.
Can you kill a ghost?
Yeah.
But yeah, so they zapped Isabel, and so Isabel's gone. And yeah, Prince Robot, he's in hot pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
The Will is dealing with what the Will is going through.
Yeah.
The Stock, his ex-lover / co-worker, got murked by Prince Robot.
By Prince Robot, yeah.
And so he's trying to figure out what he's trying to do.
And to be, to get a little bit specific about Prince Robot, he comes to that, he comes to, like, a realization where he thinks that book that he finds that Alana was reading was a clue.
Yeah.
So, like, you don't know what he's going to do with that, but he, you know, he looks in the back of the book and he sees the author, where the author lives.
On Quietus.
On Quietus. And it, like, leaves off where he takes note of it and thinks it's important to, like, you know, look into this.
Yeah.
So that's where he's at, too. For the main kind of players right now, that's pretty much it.
It's
like the Will, Prince Robot, and then the main crew.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty much where we're at, like, at the start of this. But it does actually start with, like, a flashback at the beginning, dealing with Marco and his family when he was a little kid.
Yeah, yeah.
So it starts you off, like, where he's a little kid on their home planet, which is really a moon.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's It's like, I guess it's like right when the war becomes a proxy war. Because as we talked before, like the war between the Wreath, which is, the Wreath is the moon, and then is it Landfall?
Yeah.
Is the planet?
Is the planet.
The war itself evolved into like a proxy war where they don't really even fight on each other's planet anymore. They like kind of just fight on other associated planets and it gets real wonky and political.
Yeah, yeah.
But at this point, I think it's probably right when that stuff started happening. And what we see is, like, we see Marco and his parents on a field where that was, like, the last battle taking place on their
home. On Wreath, yeah.
Yeah, and we see something pretty neat. I mean, it shows some graphic stuff, but the magic itself is neat, that we kind of, it's implied that they use some magic spell where the mom, like, cuts her hand.
Yeah, like, draws her own blood, I'm assuming.
Yeah, and it, like, shows a vision of what happened there.
Yeah.
And we see, you know, carnage, we just see, you know, terrible things. I mean, kids, like, getting messed up, like, it's pretty tough, and throughout the whole thing, just like before, in the flashbacks and stuff, there's this, like, a narration going on.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like telling you, like, this was her dad's last memory, or first memory anyway, and the battle was going on here, and apparently he learns a pretty important lesson to Wreath people, which is what?
How much they hate people from Landfall?
Yep. I think it specifically says, never forget those evil fucks with the wings.
Yeah.
So that kind of...
yeah, it just really shows you, like... I know we mentioned it before. I mean, they're at war, so, you know, of course there's some bad blood there. But, like, just really how deep that prejudice goes. Where, like, they're exposed... Like, you know, Marco's a child. They're just exposing this child to this brutal-ass, bloody battle. Mm-hmm. To be like, okay, this is why... We don't fuck with them.
Exactly.
So.
And it's like a good setup for when, right after this, it cuts to, you know, present time when the grandparents, Marco's parents, show up. And it kind of puts you in the right mindset for how they're going to be feeling about seeing him with Alana, who is, like, you know, she's a winged person from Landfall.
Mm-hmm.
So they're definitely not going to come into this like, ah, you found yourself a nice young lady.
Yeah,
you know, they're coming at it in a different, more aggressive way.
Yeah, so whenever the parents show up, they're like, who is this? They think, you know, because they assume the worst, right? They're like, okay, the last we heard of our son, he was in the war, and now he's not? So is he okay? Like, is he kidnapped? Mm-hmm. Is Alana, like, is he her prisoner? Like, they don't know what's going on.
Yeah, and they found him by him breaking the sword at the end of the last book. So he broke the sword to power the ship.
Yeah, because remember they had to sacrifice something to get to power up the ship.
Yeah, so he broke that, but I guess by breaking it, it kind of like sent out a signal that his parents could like either feel or something.
Or track or whatever.
Yeah, and that's how they show up. So of course it's like he's breaking like a family heirloom and all this, so they're going to come in hot.
Yeah, exactly. They're not having a good time. So... Yeah, so they get over the shock of the parents just showing up, and Marco and Alana are like, okay, it's cool to see you, but, like, what did you do with our ghost girl? And, like you were saying, the mom says, oh, yeah, I banished her to, like, the nearest planet. And so Marco was like, well, I gotta go get her then, man. And so he just, like, he gets, there's magic. So he just gets his axe and just, like, cuts a portal. Mm-hmm. Just, like, opens a portal and is like, I'm going to get our babysitter back, and hops through it. And Alana and the parents are like, hello? But he's gone. And so then the mom, she just jumps in the portal after him.
Yeah.
And then the portal just closes up. And then you just have Alana and the dad just looking at each other.
By the way, she's, like, in a towel.
Yeah.
Just got out the shower, pretty much.
Yeah. So she's like, wow, I'm really glad I got to do all of this in a towel.
Yeah, that's like a pretty funny line to like end. It doesn't really end that interaction, but just to kind of like end that page. And I think with the portal stuff, it has something to do with the helmets that they use too, right? Because they call it the crash helm.
Yeah.
So I think it's like in combination with the axe, it like maybe the helmet like lets you go through the portal. It, like the way they do the magic here, it's not very like, defined all the time.
Yeah.
A lot of it is implied, which I think is cool. It's cool to have magic that you have to interpret how it works.
Yeah, you kind of just have to figure it out, like, as the story goes on.
Yeah, which is cool, because there's, like, it seems like the Wreath people are the ones that are more magically attuned for the most part, so it's kind of cool because certain characters like Alana don't really know about the magic, just like how you, the reader, doesn't know.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're trying to figure it out as they're just doing it like it's normal.
Yeah,
because to them it is normal.
Yeah,
the Wreath people, I mean.
Exactly. So yeah, it's funny because, so like I said, you know, Alana and the dead are just left together on the ship. And Alana's like not even trying to like entertain him. You know what I mean? She's like, okay, number one, I don't know you. Number two, I'm naked. Number three, who are you?
Who are you? And I got my baby in my hand.
Yeah, I'm just holding a newborn. Yeah. So she just like gets the ship to just tie him up with some vines, because he's like trying to ask her 20 questions, like, who are you, where are you going, blah blah, and she's like, I don't even have time for this right now. So she just gets the ship to just string him up by some vines, and it's just like, all right, see ya.
And that's where it like leaves off. So you're like, okay, that's a great first impression, you know, for the parents and for her. And right after that, it cuts to where Marco and his mom end up, which I guess it was supposed to be like an asteroid, or
It's like, you know, it's not a whole planet because it's not big enough to be a planet, so we assume it's an asteroid. Because the whole thing with like how are you saying, you kind of just figure out how the magic goes like as you're reading. So whenever the mom said that she banished Isabel, it was to the nearest planetoid.
Okay, so yeah, so we don't know exactly, but yeah, they go to another planetoid where she banished Isabel to, and now they're gonna, you know, they're gonna be looking
for
her.
Yeah, they're just looking for her. And so it's funny because, so the mom, her name is Clara, and then the dad's name is Bar.
Just so
we get that out there. So
we can stop saying grandma, grandpa.
Yeah. So Clara is over here trying to like play catch up with Marco because, you know, she hasn't seen him since he left for the war. Mm-hmm. And so like he's been through the war, he was a prisoner of war, and then broke out.
Yeah,
and so, then some time happened, so like it's been a minute.
And needless to say, he's going to be like a different person.
Exactly,
it's not the same kid that went off to
war. Yeah, so she's over here, because what is funny is, so like you said, whenever he broke the sword to like make that sacrifice to power the ship, you know, it sent off some signal or whatever that they knew about. But then also Clara says that she was they were visited by a freelancer who was looking for him.
Yeah.
And so Marco was like, oh, are you talking about
the stock?
And then she was like, no, it was a dude. And so you can automatically assume that it was the Will.
Yeah,
that had stopped by,
because he asked like who it is, and she says that he didn't give his name, but as we only know two of the freelancers, so we're gonna assume it's the Will.
Exactly. So whenever the Will shows up and starts asking after Marco, the parents, they really get nervous, and so that really spurred them into going in after them, or after Marco. But like you were saying, about this deep-seated prejudice between people from Wreath and Landfall, Clara doesn't even want to entertain the idea of them being like in an actual relationship, like a loving, care about each other relationship. She just assumes like, oh, I don't know, like Alana's some, like
a concubine.
Yeah.
Just like basically disrespecting the man's girl. So
and Marco was not about it.
Yeah, he's definitely like, he snaps back at her, or I guess like the kids say, he claps back. And there's some tension growing between them, but, you know, it's still mother-son relationship. Like, they're trying to find Isabel.
Yeah.
And in the middle of them kind of like catching up / really just arguing.
Yeah.
They, you know, some, I guess a club.
Yeah.
Like just some giant club comes and like crashes next to them, knocks them to the ground. And on the next page, we see what was holding that club. And it's pretty gross.
I mean, okay, it's a giant. Like, it's this nasty ass giant. But his balls are out. Like, it's gross.
Everything is out.
He's just not even wearing clothes, and it's gross.
Yeah, but he's like hundreds and hundreds of feet,
like,
pretty much.
Yeah,
like he's super giant, and now they gotta try to deal with this
giant.
Yeah, literally giant.
yeah.
So like that's where they get left off, because like as we know from the first book, like this story does a lot of jumping back and forth a lot. So it's like, you have like four pages here, four pages there. So that's where we end up. That's where we end off there. And it cuts back to Alana and Barr, the grandpa.
Yeah. So Barr, he's tied up in the vines and she's just sitting there. I'll say, you know, she doesn't want to be disrespectful because this is her husband's parents, but she's kind of like gloating, like, oh, you're in my ship and I've got you tied up.
She's sassy.
she's a little sassy. So she's like, I mean, she doesn't literally be like, but, you know, she's like, hey, you're tied up and you can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. And Barr was like, well, you know, I know magic too. Like, we all know magic. Yeah. And she calls his bluff because she's like, okay, well, even though I don't understand totally how your magic works, I do know that you have to have a secret. Mm-hmm. You either have to sacrifice or tell a secret about yourself that nobody else knows. Yeah. And she's like, and, you know, I've talked to Marco a lot, so I know a lot about you. But then he just looks at her and he's like, well, I only have a month to live. And as soon as he says it, the vines like disintegrate. And she's like, wait, you only have a month to live? What?
Yeah. And it's like a super, it's a shock already, but it's like a super shock because the whole secret for the magic spell is not necessarily the person you're talking to doesn't know the secret. It has to be
that
secret
nobody knows.
That nobody knows. Yeah. So immediately Alana's like, you haven't even told your wife. You haven't even told your son.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he doesn't really go too much into it, but he explains, you know, it's not contagious. It's just some
and
sort of...
And it's magic resistant, apparently. It's
magic resistant disease that I think it was like described to him by a cleric, final stage. So it's kind of like a stage four, kind of like a cancer sort of thing.
Yeah.
And he can't just get rid of it with magic. So he's pretty much stuck there.
Yeah. So whenever he tells that secret, like I said, the vines like disintegrate and lets him go. And then when she's like freaking out about the fact that he hasn't told anybody that he's dying, he casts a spell on her. It's like some dust came out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because the language that they speak, I think we talked about it. We touched on it in the last episode. Where the language that they, people from Wreath speak a different language, and it's like the script will look different in the comic, and it's blue. So like, colloquially in the universe, they'll describe it as people talking blue.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he says something in blue. Mm-hmm. And I think he says dormi.
Yeah.
Which is funny because it's
close to Spanish.
Yeah, it makes you think of Spanish. Yeah, so
it's actually a lot of it is like that. And maybe it's close, it has other bits of other languages.
Maybe kind of like Portuguese? I don't know.
But like, at least like, since we're exposed to Spanish, we really pick up on the words that are similar. So it's kind of neat that it is a made up language, but it has like these roots.
Yeah, in like real languages.
In a language that we know that's not just a random word taken, like how he puts her to sleep and the spell is dormi, which is close to sleep in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty neat how they do that. And so he puts her to sleep. She's still holding Hazel.
Yeah.
And she's kind of like freaking out about that as she's passing out. He holds her and hears that she says, you know,
like, please, Hazel, don't hurt her. Like, don't hurt Hazel.
Yeah. He hears the name and it's like a sweet moment where he's like holding her, looking down at Hazel, and he says, beautiful goddamn name. And you're just like, you know,
because
it's like a sweet moment, but then you're like, oh, but he only has a month to live.
Yeah.
So he's kind of like, he's just meeting his
granddaughter. Yeah.
You know, for the first time. And it's in terrible situation in general, but also he's about to die like in a month, so it's tough. But that's the end of the first chapter there.
Yeah.
And then right after that we cut to another flashback. There's a lot of flashbacks in this one.
Yeah I don't think I said it before, but even though the volume two does continue progressing the story as we see, you know, like meeting the parents and they're trying to find Isabel, but I feel like this is a really character development heavy issue.
Yes.
Or volume, I guess. Because you get flashbacks for almost everybody that shows up in this volume. So you really start to see, you know, like where they're coming from, what their motivations are. Starts to explain a little bit of like relationships between characters.
Yeah.
So that's pretty neat.
Yeah. And it's cool because like whoever's listening, if you're like an anime fan or a manga fan or anything, you hear the word flashback, you want to just roll your eyes.
Yeah.
Because you're kind of thinking it's something that's just rehashing something you've already seen.
That's true.
But when we say flashback in this context, it is just a true like flashback to their past that you have not seen.
Yeah, it's all new information.
Yeah, so it's like, so when we say it's heavy on the flashbacks, like you said, it may not be progressing the literal story going on right now, but it is kind of progressing your understanding on everybody.
Exactly.
So it's still fun. It's like, it's cool. It's not how you would think with an anime flashback or something.
Yeah.
But this flashback's about Alana. Well, Alana and Marco.
Yeah.
But it starts with the perspective of Alana being a soldier.
Mm-hmm. She's one of the guards for Marco.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, they haven't explicitly said, but you can assume, like we said, you know, Marco, he admits that he was a soldier, and somehow or another, he ends up getting captured by people from Landfall. And so, in this flashback, you've got Alana as the guard, and he's a prisoner. He's a prisoner of war.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's like, before you even see her, like, specifically guarding him, they kind of throw in a little nugget there where she's reading that book.
Yeah, it was like the first time that she had found that author, I believe.
So it's like, you kind of see that book, it puts it back in your mind where you're like, oh yeah, that's the book that, you know, Prince Robot found. So
yeah.
You kind of see like her, I think at this point she had just finished the book and she's telling one of her fellow guards, you got to read this
book. Yeah, you got to check this book out.
Basically how you are with any book that you read. So
yeah.
It's like,
guilty.
that's how it is. And the person, the other guard is just kind of like, it sounds boring. I don't really want
yeah.
to. I got other stuff going on. And she's just like, please, I need somebody to talk
yeah,
to.
Yeah, I just need anybody to talk to.
So it's like, you know, neat little character moment. And then after that, we see her kind of leave that post, and then she's going to actually like guard the prisoners.
Yeah, because I guess he was making a ruckus.
Mm-hmm.
He
was like speaking, and I guess they weren't supposed to like speak after sunset. Yeah, there was no talking after sunset.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So
she goes to check it out, and up until this point, you know, Marco doesn't speak whatever language people from, you know, you don't know if it's English or not, but whatever the common tongue. Marco, he only knew blue, like he's from Wreath, you know, so he's over here trying to speak in like broken English, trying to talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, what are you trying to say to me right now? And he ends up saying, I think, what, we come in peace.
Yeah, because he's saying like peas,
yeah,
as like the food, but he's trying to say like peace be unto you.
Yeah,
but like he doesn't have a good grasp of the language.
So yeah,
she's like kind of picking up what he's saying, and he's trying to say like, hey, like, please, like, you know, we're not so different, you and I.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Like, he's trying to appeal to her better nature. And it's like, on that page, you're like, this is that sweet little moment where they're going to meet and kind of hit it off. But when you turn the page, you see that she just, like, cracks him across the face. And it's like, I said no talking, you know, like.
And you're like, oh, well,
yeah, and
that was a good first meeting.
Yeah, and, like, Hazel as the narrator even makes the joke where it's like, in romantic comedies, this moment is called the meet cute, which is, like, an actual thing in romantic comedies. Like, the most common example is, like, you know, two kids in the high school that they're eventually going to be romantically involved. They kind of run into each other in the hallway and their books fly everywhere. And
yeah.
You know, they're trying to grab their books and then their hand touches each other. Like that kind of moment.
Yeah.
That's a meet cute. But their version here is her cracking them in the mouth for, you know, speaking sideways. So like it's kind of funny that this story does a lot with like subverting what you would expect.
Yeah.
But,
so funny.
Yeah, so, like, after that, it goes right back to present time.
Yep.
And it's, Barr, you know, putting Alana, not Alana, putting Hazel to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And, Alana was asleep.
Yeah.
You know, knocked out from the spell. And she's, like, waking up from the spell now.
Yeah.
And
you know, she's been asleep for a minute, so she's kind of delirious. Like, what's going on? Where am I? And she sees Barr, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just Barr in the room. She's kind of like laying in the bed. Oh, how's Hazel? Like, where is she? And he like reassures her that, you know, Hazel's fine. He put her in the crib. And because essentially he tells her that he's already set the ship to go somewhere,
mm-hmm.
like while she was asleep. And you don't know what that is. Alana doesn't know what that is, but that's where their little section ends. And then
yeah, because it's like she's only awake for like a minute
and then she goes right back out.
Yeah.
And so then it cuts back to Marco and Clara.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the grandma.
Yeah, back on the asteroid.
Mm-hmm.
And so like we said, you know, this giant rolled up on them, and Clara's ready to fight. Okay, Clara's got her axe out. She's ready to try and bop this dude, but Marco's like, hey man, maybe we can just like hit it with a binding spell.
Yeah,
you know, Because remember, at this point, he's a pacifist. Mm-hmm. That was the whole thing in the last issue where he didn't want to fight. That's why he broke the sword, because he says, you know, violence only begets more violence.
Yeah.
So he's not trying to fight this giant. And Clara is so over him trying to be, trying to be like a pacifist.
Yeah, because it's like just more things that she's like realizing about her son that has changed. Not just, you know, his love interest with this race that she hates.
Yep.
But also, like, he's not, he doesn't have the warrior spirit anymore. All these things that they kind of pride themselves on.
Uh-huh.
So, but even though she's against it, you know, Marco still ends up binding the giant.
Yeah.
And he's trying to, like, speak to the giant to get information about where Isabel is.
Mm-hmm.
And the giant doesn't speak either the English or common tongue or blue.
Yeah, he speaks whatever giant speak is.
Yeah, but like as we remember before, like the rings that that Marco had.
Yeah, those like translator rings. The
translator rings. So they don't just work between these languages. It seems like they maybe work on all languages, but at least a lot of them.
Yeah. So Marco's trying to talk to the giant to be like, hey, you know, have you seen a pink ghost girl around? Mm. And the giant was like, oh, yeah, like, I seen her floating around, and, Marco was like, well, you know, like, where on this planet can we find her? And the giant was like, oh, this isn't a planet, homie. This is an egg. And it's about to hatch.
And it's like, what does that mean?
An egg.
Yeah.
What?
That's pretty foreboding. You don't want to know what happens when that thing hatches.
Yeah, like if it's an egg that's big enough to be mistaken for like a planetoid, there's a problem.
Yeah, that, whatever's going to hatch is most likely not going to be chill. It's not going to be a chill
thing. No, it's not going to be a good time.
Yeah, so like while that's going on, you know, we cut back to Alana waking back up.
Yeah, and so she actually wakes up this time.
Yeah, and she finds like a little package rolled up on the bed. It turns out to be clothes.
Yeah, and she's like, clothes.
Yeah, that bar like sewed for her.
Yeah, that bar made, because she, so she gets dressed and then she goes into the other room to find Bar, and he's at, what's it called? The wheel?
The sewing, what's it called?
Spinning wheel. A spinning wheel.
Yeah.
And he's just going to town on the spinning wheel. And she's like, wow, how great. I didn't know that my father-in-law was a seamstress. And he's like, girl, I'm not a seamstress. I'm an armorer. Yeah. And you're like, oh, shit, Bar is real.
Yeah, he's definitely real. And it's like he made her clothes. It's not armor, but he actually tells her that the clothing that he made for her is ray-proof.
Yeah, gunpowder resistant. Yeah. And that he was making clothes for everybody, for Hazel and for Marco.
Yeah. So and like
so she's like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he does specifically say, like, it won't protect against, like, bladed weapons.
Yeah.
So he was like,
so like you can still get stabbed.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like it'll give you some protection because, you know, a lot of the weaponry in this story is like guns, lasers, that kind of thing.
So that should help.
Yeah. So and she tries to inquire about the disease that he has because he kind of like while he's talking to her, he like holds his chest. He's kind of in pain.
Yeah.
It seems almost like a heart attack sort of thing.
Yeah.
And she's just trying to tell him that maybe we can find a way to beat this. We can work together. And he really lays it out where he knows for a fact that there's nothing they can do.
Yeah.
And he's kind of coming to grips with that. And he's actually coming to grips with her relationship with Marco.
Yeah.
Because apparently, like, she talks a lot in her sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So he, like, overheard her, you know, her just subconscious talking about Marco.
Yeah.
And he's like, wow, you really love him.
Yeah.
So, like, as opposed to how Clara is.
Yeah, exactly.
She's, like, super coming in hot, like bump this. You don't really love her.
Yeah.
You know, Bar.
She's just a concubine.
Yeah, exactly. Bar is actually, like, coming to grips with it. And, you know, which is makes it even more sad.
Because, yeah, that he's dying.
Yeah. So that's where we leave off there, and we cut back to, well, actually, here we don't even cut back to Marco.
Nope.
Yeah,
we get to see my boy.
Yeah, you see your boy kind of at this point because you see you kind of see the freelancers have like an agency, that they report to and stuff. And the guy who like runs the agency is like he's like a seahorse.
Yeah,
dude is like a seahorse humanoid, and he's just like sitting at a desk taking phone calls and you know just doing freelancer stuff. But somebody rolls up to him from behind inquiring about, you know, the the Marco and Alana stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's like, like, who are you? Like, what are you asking about? And when he turns around, we meet what is your favorite character, Gwendolyn.
My girl, Gwendolyn.
Yeah, it's her. And we've heard that name before.
Yep.
Because that's who Marco was. Were they weren't married, right?
No, they were engaged. They were engaged.
That's the name that he says in the last volume when he's about to, like, pass out.
Oh, that's right. And yeah, he was like, Gwendolyn, I'm sorry. And Alana was like, who the fuck is Gwendolyn?
Yeah, exactly. So we get to meet her, and she, like, looks super cool. She's got, like, the horns.
I love her.
Yeah. Fun fact, that's who you were for Halloween.
2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, 2 years ago. So if that doesn't tell you how much you love this character.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that ends there on, like, a little cliffhanger. That's the end of that chapter, as we see Gwendolyn roll up, inquiring about the whole Alana and
situation.
Marco situation.
Yeah.
So after that, we cut back to the will.
Now we get to see the will.
Yeah, now we get to see the will.
And so the will, it cuts to, like, he's trying to rescue the little slave girl. He's, like, back on that planet. Mm-hmm. And the head mistress lady or whatever, you know, is, like, giving him shit. And he ends up... What happens? Somebody comes and blasts somebody?
Yeah, like, he's in talks with the leader girl. Is like, what was it, Mama Sun? Because she has, like, a sun mask.
Yeah,
it looks
like
the literal sun. And her two bodyguards get blasted, and we see it's the Stock. And you're like, huh?
Wait, I thought she got blasted.
We saw her get blasted. She has, like, the wound in her chest. Yeah. It's kind of, like, sewn up. And you're like, oh, so she's back?
Yeah, okay, she's all right.
Yeah, that's pretty weird. And, you know, the Stock, you know, kills Mama Sun, kills the bodyguards, you know, pretty much saves the will and the little slave girl. And, you know, she comes up and kisses the will, like, she's
and
talking.
And you're like, oh, man.
Yeah, it's like, wow, this is going pretty good. And she's, like, bantering with him and introducing herself to the slave girl. But, like, right when you're kind of thinking, like, everything seems to be working out, the little slave girl's face, like, morphs into some weird monster-looking thing.
Yeah.
And, like, takes a bite out of the will, and you see that he wakes up and it was just a dream.
Yeah.
So he's back on just some random deserted planet, because as we remember, he failed at getting the slave girl.
Yeah.
So it's like that was just a dream of him hope, but I guess wishing that this would have happened.
Yeah, that it would have ended differently.
Mm-hmm. So when the will wakes up from that crazy nightmare that he was having, he sees he hears somebody rolling up on him.
Yeah.
And he's trying to wonder what's going on with that. And we see that it's Gwendolyn.
Gwendolyn just rolled up on this guy.
Yeah, she got the information from the freelancing agent guy.
Yep, where he was.
And she's here inquiring about the whole situation. She tells him that she works for the security general of the Wreath High Command.
Yeah.
Which a lot of these terms and titles, you don't really know.
Yeah.
Because you don't really know the political structure of everything, but it seems pretty legit. You know what I'm saying?
If someone walks up to you and says they're the security general for a whole planet, you're like, oh, she means business.
Yeah. And while she's talking to him, the will brings up that she has pretty good language. That's what it's called. But we forgot the common tongue. It's just called language.
Oh, okay.
So he says, wow, you got a pretty good language for someone from, like, a lunar type.
Yeah.
She's from the moon.
Right.
And she tells him that it's not that. It's actually her necklace.
Yeah.
That's translating.
Yeah.
Which we remember that the ring that Marco gives to Alana, mm-hmm, was actually her ring.
Exactly.
It was supposed to be, like, I guess it's, she gave it to
him.
Him, yeah.
Yeah.
As, like, a engagement thing.
Yeah. So you can assume that these are probably part of a set, like some translator set.
Yeah. And she seems pretty, like, sad when she says that it's like, oh, this is what the translator is. We know why she's sad.
Right.
But the will's just kind of, like, doing his own thing. He's got other shit to worry about.
Yeah. Yeah. But, so she, like you said, she rolls up on the will and she wants to know, like, okay, man, how is your investigation going? Like, you know, Wreath as a country or whatever, we hired you to take care of these couple of miscreants, and you're just here on a planet, sleep?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, you know, I got kind of caught up. I got some personal stuff going on.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, so Gwendolyn tells her, or tells the will that through her connections, I mean, being security general for Wreath, she knows that Prince Robot, not only is Prince Robot also in hot pursuit of Barco and Alana, but she knows that Prince Robot was the one that killed the stock.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is all news to the Will, mm-hmm. you know? But...
Well, he knew it was Prince Robot that killed the stock.
Oh, that's right.
Because he talks to him on the phone.
That's right.
So, like, he's, like, he was pissed off when he heard that, but, like, this is, like, confirmation of what exactly was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so Gwendolyn tells him that his best shot at finding Alana and Marco would be to find Prince Robot.
Exactly. So it's, like... It's basically like he's telling her, oh, I don't have time to do this job because I got a personal thing that came up, a.k.a. fucking up Prince Robot.
Yeah.
But she's telling him like, oh, well, you can knock out two birds with one stone because if you find one, you'll find the other.
Exactly.
So it's like, you got to work with me pretty much.
Yeah. But, you know, if you remember, like we were saying at the beginning, he's hung up on trying to rescue this slave girl. Mm-hmm. So, like, even though... Alana and Marco are, like, really down on the list of his priorities right now, right? So he's trying to figure out, or he wants to get revenge for whoever killed the stock, and he's also trying to rescue this slave girl. So he was like, I can't help you, man. I'm trying to save this little girl. Like, you can't have a little girl on a sex planet.
Yeah.
And so Gwendolyn is like, all right, man, I'll help you save this little girl if then you'll, like, get your shit together and start trying to find your bounty.
Yeah. Right? And the Will's kind of like, yeah, it's not so easy. I tried and they wouldn't let her come with me no matter what. And she was like, it ain't that hard.
Here, hold my beer.
Yeah, hold my beer pretty much. And she goes in and gets on a phone in his ship.
Yeah.
And actually calls Sextillion, the planet, and talks to Mama Sun and basically just, like, just jukes her out of, you know, giving up the kid.
Yeah, so she's, like, impersonating, like, Wreath Homeland Police and, like, makes up some story about how, you know, like, we got reports of, like, a little girl getting kidnapped from Wreath and they cut her horns off
mm-hmm.
and, you know, we don't know what happened to her. And Mama Sun was like, well, you know, too bad for you guys that we always get our employees from reputable places.
Yeah.
And Gwendolyn was like, well, I don't know how happy your clients would be to know that they've been messing around with a little girl from Wreath.
Yeah, because like we said, it's not just Barr and Clara who are like racist like this. It's like pretty much everybody's racist against the other side.
Yeah.
So she even phrases it like, oh, like how would they feel if they knew that they were like messing around with some filthy Mooney and all this?
Yeah.
So like really sticks in there's like she tells Mama Sun like, I'm just going to make a big PR stink. It's going to be terrible for Sextillion.
Yeah.
So just work with me here.
Yeah.
And it ends up working.
Yeah. Mama Sun was like, okay, well, you know, I'll have her waiting for you and you guys can come pick her up in an hour and that'll be that.
Yeah.
And so the Will was just like, dang girl, that was so easy. Like I tried and failed and that was so easy for you.
Yeah. So... It just shows the connections that Gwendolyn has and how much of a badass that she is.
Yeah, exactly. So they go to pick up the little girl. You know, it's like an hour later or whatever. They go to the meeting spot. But then, so they see the little girl, but then she's like surrounded by guards.
Mm-hmm.
And Mama Sun was like, oh yeah, I figured that phone call was some plan by the Will to try to get this little girl, so fuck you pretty much.
Yeah, so it's like Mama Sun's not there, but she sent these bodyguards to like look out for the Will, and the Will just being so like I don't even know what to call it, but just kind of so straightforward about things.
Yeah,
he's actually there showing up with Gwendolyn to pick up the kid, so the bodyguards are like, hey, there's the guy that she said was probably scheming.
Exactly.
So she was right. And
yeah.
And it becomes a whole thing.
Yeah, a whole thing. So immediately the bodyguards, they start shooting and you're like, oh no, here goes another gunfight. Right? But then the Will, he has like a weapon on his hip and he goes to pull it out and they're like, oh, what are you going to do with a sword? A sword can't do anything against guns. And he's like, oh, it's not a sword. It's a lance.
Yeah.
And it's not magic, but it's some magic-y high-tech...
It's basically go-go gadget stab you in the chest.
Yeah.
Like, it's Inspector Gadget. It's like a sword thing that just extends. Like, they're pretty far away from each other.
It's like a whip.
Yeah, and it just extends out and just stabs one of the bodyguards. Which, by the way, we can't go any further without talking about what the bodyguards are.
Oh, that's right.
Because they were wild.
Yeah.
Like, so the bodyguards are just, like, if we're just talking about how they look, mm-hmm. they're dressed up in these nice, snazzy suits.
Right.
They have like Tommy guns, like little mobster looking guns, yeah. and they have the mobster getup.
You know, pretty reg.
Yeah, pretty reg. But reg for this story, they're not just dudes. They're these weird mole looking guys.
Yeah.
And we're talking about like, we're not talking about the naked mole rat from Kim Possible, cute little thing. We're talking like the nasty mouth tendril.
Yeah.
Like just.
Like eyes barely open.
Yeah, just gross looking things. Yeah. So that's what the bodyguards kinda are. Gross. Yeah. But we ain't got to talk too much about them because, as we said.
They did.
Yeah, one of them gets stabbed in the chest. The other one gets sliced open. Lion Cat, which we haven't brought up, but you can safely assume anytime the Will is around, Lion Cat
is right there.
He rolls up and just starts chomping on the guy.
He is chomping.
And, you know, the Will kind of gets into like a little fight with the last big mole bodyguard. And the bodyguard's kind of like got him by the neck and holds him up. And Gwendolyn actually saves the Will from that situation. She shoots the bodyguard and you know, from across the way. Oh, she doesn't even actually shoot him.
Yeah,
it's
no,
spell.
She she magics him.
Yeah, she magics him. She says that she specifically says, "My ex taught me this."
Yep.
And we know who that is. And she just does like some crazy lightning spell that just like obliterates the guy.
Yeah.
And it's just like, Jesus. We also learn a little tidbit that they kind of gloss over, like, but they throw it in there where the Will says, oh, casting weather type of spells, like spells that deal with weather, mm-hmm. is like risky because it literally can shave weeks off your life.
I guess, that's right.
I guess it's something dealing with like your life force or whatever.
Yeah.
So they didn't really like go into that, but at least now you know like, oh, there's even drawbacks to
using,
some of these spells.
Yeah,
that
like
you
this
use.
Really strong magic.
Yeah. So apparently, and at that point, Gwendolyn says she's never actually killed anyone.
Yeah.
And you see that the bodyguard is actually still breathing. He's still alive.
Yeah. And the Will was like, well, here's your chance.
Yeah. Just hands her one of the guy's Tommy guns and then just lets loose.
Yeah. Yeah, because then the next frame, like, it cuts to them back on the ship, so you can just assume that she did kill that guard.
Mm-hmm. And they got the slave girl.
They rescue the little girl, finally. So the Will is like, whew, finally, I'm done with that, at least. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they're getting her settled and the Will's trying to figure out, like, what is he going to do with the little girl? Like, he didn't think further than rescuing her. He just saw a damsel in distress, had to rescue her, and now he doesn't know what to do with her.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's like, oh, you know, like, maybe we could take her to, like, a shelter planet or, you know, but Gwendolyn is like, I feel like no matter where you take her, people are going to try to fuck her up, you know?
Yeah, so we're kind of, like, stuck with her. We got to just take care of her, at least at this point.
At least for now.
Yeah.
And then, so Gwendolyn and the Will, they're over here trying to talk about, like, what do they want to do with her? But then the little girl actually, like, walks up to them and was, like, says to Gwendolyn that her necklace sounds sad.
Weird.
And you're like, okay. her necklace sounds sad and that it misses its friends.
Yeah.
And this is strange because the little girl wouldn't know that there's also translator rings that exist.
They were part of that set.
Yeah. So Gwendolyn's like, if she can hear, quote unquote, hear this jewelry, you know, does that mean that like the other pieces of the set are close?
Yeah.
You know? And
the slave girl is basically confirms this by saying like, yeah, you know, I can hear them, and they ask her, like, where are they?
Yeah.
And she just kind of points that away.
Yeah, she literally says that away.
Yeah, which is funny, like, you're just in space. Like,
yeah.
The ever expanse, and it's just like, yeah, that way.
It's that way.
So, like, that's the end of that chapter. They're on the hunt. They have a tracking device in the form of this girl.
Yeah, that can just hear. Yeah. Magic jewelry? Okay.
Yeah,
whatever.
So they're going to be back on that pursuit pretty much.
Yeah. So next, like you said, that was the end of that chapter. So then the next chapter, we get another flashback.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. This one is really nice because so that last flashback was the first time Alana and Marco met. But now in this flashback, you can see that they've been kind of chilling with each other for a little bit. I mean, you know, he's still a prisoner of war and she's still a guard, but she's reading that book to him. Mm-hmm. They kind of just have like just story time, you know, like whenever he's like out on guard or out on yard duty, mm-hmm. she'll be out there with him and she'll just be reading him from that Oswald heist dude.
Yeah.
And I really like this flashback because it's cute, because you can tell they're starting to like each other.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
But she was like, yeah, you know, like story time is like my favorite part of the day. And Marco was like, well, that's too bad because I'm getting transferred out of here tomorrow. And she's like, what? And I can't remember. What was the... Where was he going? Getting transferred to? I don't remember. Someplace.
Yeah, I think it's just like some other camp or some other... I don't know if... Does it explicitly say?
I don't remember. I just remember that whatever camp he's getting transferred to, people don't come back from that camp.
Oh, yeah. It's called Black Site.
Yeah.
Which already sounds foreboding.
Yeah, it already sounds bad.
But so it seems like it would probably be some type of like death camp sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which, and also, by the way, we don't know how much time has passed.
Right.
But definitely some time has passed from them first meeting, like a decent amount.
Yeah.
Because he's speaking... The language.
Yeah, like the common tongue or whatever, yeah.
He's speaking that well, and so it's like they've definitely had time to form this bond, so when she hears that he's getting transferred, she's definitely not having it.
She's sad, man, because she's like, man, he's like actually pretty cool, even though he's like a Mooney, you know?
Yeah.
And so he's like, yeah, you know, I'm getting transferred tomorrow, and, you know, I want to give you my translator rings, because, you know... I'll have no use for them there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just hear bam, and you're like, what? And she shoots his chain off.
Yep.
And he's like, what are you doing? And she's like, we're getting out of here.
Yeah. So then they share that, I guess, what would be their first kiss.
Yeah.
So it's like, nice touching moment there. That's when they start being on the run.
Yep.
Pretty much was that whole ordeal.
Yep.
And after that, We're done with that flashback, and we cut back to present time with Marco and Clara still looking for Isabel.
Yeah. So they know now that they're on an egg.
Whatever that means.
Whatever that means. And that the egg is getting close to hatching, so they're trying to hustle. You know, they're like, okay, we got to find this ghost girl because we don't know what's coming out of this egg. We don't know what's going to happen. We need to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking around, and then they end up getting... they run into some, they look kind of look like witches almost, but they're kind of gross because they have like upside down heads.
Yeah, like their body is normal.
Yeah.
But then their face
is upside
itself
down.
Is upside down, and they're called the midwives.
Yeah, they call themselves the midwives, and they're like, who are you to interrupt the grand birth? And Marco's like, I don't know what you're doing. I'm just looking for my ghost.
Yeah.
But then, so all the midwives try to, like, roll up on them, but then you see, like, this giant bear come out of nowhere.
Well, it's actually I think it's a flaming gorilla.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a giant flaming gorilla, which is just so wild.
Yeah.
And, it actually, like, when it pops up, it literally says boo.
Yeah.
So that's already, like, a weird tip-off.
Right.
That you're like, that's strange. And the kind of like with when people from Wreath speak in blue, the text is literally blue. The text here is pink, which I don't think we've said before, but it is indicative to a specific character that speaks in pink, which we will soon find out. Once that flaming gorilla shows up, scares off the midwives, it turns out to be Isabel.
Yeah, it was Isabel doing one of her illusions.
Yeah. So, like, that's another thing, too, where she always speaks in pink.
Because
she is, like, pink-colored.
Right.
So that's kind of like a little tip-off there. And it's kind of funny because her illusions are supposed to be, like, these crazy, wild things that, like, will scare people. That's kind of like those ghosts.
Yeah.
That's, like, their defense mechanism that they can use.
Right.
But it's kind of funny as the reader because things in this story are so weird inherently, the real things.
Yeah, yeah.
That when these illusions happen, you still get got.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem that much more weird than a mole wearing a suit.
Yeah, with a Tommy gun.
Yeah, so it's just kind of funny. But yeah, so it's Isabel. They found her.
They're like, all right, we got Isabel. Let's get out of here.
Yeah.
Because, like, as soon as they're reunited, it was funny because, like we said, that the gorilla shows up and it scares the midwives away, and Clara also gets spooked. She's like, oh, no, is this, like, even worse? And Marco's like, oh, I think I know who this is.
Yeah.
And so whenever they finally, like, meet back up with her and, you know, they're like, yay, we got Isabel back. It's almost like an earthquake happens and there's, like, a giant ripple crack that just cuts through.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, Oh, that's not good.
We gotta get back to the ship.
Now. So they make another portal, and they all, the three of them, get back to the ship. And they get back on the ship, and they're like, guys, we need to book it out of here. Mm-hmm. Because you can literally see out of the spaceship window, the egg is hatching. Like, it's coming completely open. You can just see this giant fetus-looking thing just floating in space, and giant as in it's the size of that planetoid.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it has a big splash page.
Yeah, where it's both pages.
It's both pages, and you see the tiny little blip of the ship that they're on. So it's, like, that big. But you still don't really know, like, what it is.
Yeah, so they see this thing, or whatever, hatching from its egg, and they're like, okay, we need to book it out of here. But, like, as soon as they verbally say, we need to book it out of here, all the lights in the ship change color.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, okay, what is that? The last time we saw that was when the grandparents showed up on the ship. And so you're like, oh, does that mean, like, another ship is close to them? And sure enough, it is, because it cuts and it's the Will and Gwendolyn in their ship.
Yeah.
Just rolling up.
And you have the slave girl in there, like, hey, that's, like, pointing to that ship and saying, that's where the rings are.
Yeah.
Like, I can hear them in there. And so they've essentially made it to their target.
Right.
Now they got to try to figure out how to,
like, board the ship, I
how
guess.
How to board the ship, get them. Because, you know, the bounty, or whatever you want to call it, is to kill Marco and Alana. But it is, they have to get the baby alive.
Yeah, they want the baby back alive.
Yeah, so they can't just shoot the ship.
Right.
Like, you know what I'm saying? And while they're kind of figuring all this out, the Will sees that fetus egg thing in the distance, and he knows what it is.
Yeah. So, like, when you see the Will freak out, you're like, oh, this is, like, some real stuff.
Yeah,
because the Will's been through some shit, right? So when the Will looks up and he was like, oh shit, it's a time suck.
Mm-hmm.
And as the reader, you're like, I don't know what a time suck is.
Yeah,
that sounds horrible, but I don't know what that is.
Even Gwendolyn didn't know what it was.
Yeah. She was like, what? And he describes it as an astrological super predator.
Oof.
And, yeah. And so the Will was just like, fuck those rings. Okay, we're leaving. We need to get out of here. And Gwendolyn is like, no, like, we came all this way. Our bounty is to get Alana and Marco. We're going to get them. So against the Will's wishes, Gwendolyn just goes over and mashes a button and shoots off a missile.
Yeah.
Aiming right at Marco and Alana's ship. And
messing up.
Just
not a good idea.
And the Will is like, hello. And so it cuts back to Marco and Alana, and they see the missile coming towards them, and they're like, oh no, this is bad, right? So Clara's like, oh, we need to do evasive maneuvers, and Alana's like, no, we need full speed ahead. And you're thinking, okay, are you just gonna run into this missile? Like, what are you planning? But I mean, Alana, you know, she was in the military. She knows what's up. She explains, hey, this missile is not going to detonate if it's too close to the ship that shot it.
Yeah.
So if we can, like,
Close that gap,
it's not going to blow up. We can just kind of, like, hit it and it gets deflected.
Yeah, because it's like the missile's heat-seeking, too. So it's like it would just track them if they tried to run away.
Right.
So she thinks the best thing to do is just roll up into it, which turns out to actually be
the smart thing to do.
Yeah, because the missile just bounces off of the ship.
Yeah, it doesn't detonate.
Exploding. Yeah.
And so, yeah, it bounces off the ship, and then you see it swerve, and then the missile actually hits the time suck baby.
Yes.
And you're like, oh no.
And the time suck baby starts, like, spewing this black liquid. It's like, it's not looking good. The liquid's, like, piercing ships.
Yeah. So the liquid, it pierces the Will's ship. And so it's just got this giant gash in it. And, you know, it's space. So as soon as it gets cut, everything just gets sucked and flown out into space.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just see Lion Cat's out in space.
That was...
No!
Yeah, because everybody's holding on for dear life. And
not Princess Leia.
Yeah. Everybody's holding on for dear life. But you see the Will kind of, like, looking around.
Yeah.
And when he, like... He exclaims out, like, you know, in anger / sadness, and you just see, like you said, Lion Cat floating out in space, and you're like, oh, that's his boy, that's his partner, pretty much.
Yeah.
And that's actually how that chapter ends, so you're just like, ah, damn.
Can you imagine having to read this issue by issue? Oh, you would be so angry.
Yeah, I'm so glad we could just binge this. Like, if I would have ended on that, man, I would have... I don't even know what I would have done.
Yeah.
I would have flipped shit. Yeah.
Yeah. So Lion Cat is out in space. Yeah. And the Will, you know, like we said, that's his boy, right? So the Will is like, okay, I'm going to get my boy. So he, like, uses his lance sword whip thing and propels himself out into space, snags Lion Cat, is able to get back to his ship. And as soon as he gets back on the ship, Gwendolyn uses some more magic, some more blue. And she's able to, like, patch the ship, just kind of, like, comes back together.
Yeah, fixes it.
Like, fixes itself. And then, yeah, the Will is like, all right, we're out of here. Like, I'm not dealing with them. I'm not dealing with the time suck. We're out of here. So they just jet out. Yeah, they just leave.
So they're good to go, but that still leaves our boys
in
their ship. And they're trying to figure out, like, how can they get out of this area before the time suck baby just does what it's going to do.
Right. And so they're hitting the engine. They're like, all right, you tree rocket ship, it's time to go. And, like, they're going full speed ahead, but they're not moving. Not only are they not moving, it seems like they're moving in reverse. So if you can't tell by the name of a time suck, it seems like it has some gravitational pull to it. Or it's just sucking everything in.
Yeah.
So it's starting, like, they're stuck in its pull.
Yeah.
And so they're like, okay, we need to, like, get this ship going.
Yeah,
you know?
We gotta give it a boost.
Yeah. So Clara and Marco, they run down to the engine room. And they're trying to think of, like, just something to put into the furnace, you know, to get the engine to go into overdrive pretty much. And Marco was like, well, let's use these magic helmets.
Yeah, which is funny, too, because, like, Clara's not even thinking, let's throw something in there to go faster. She's already given up hope and says, hey, take the helmet and just teleport somewhere.
Oh, that's right.
And leave us behind. And he grabs the helmet, and that's when he's like, ah, and just, like, tosses it into the furnace, like, for, like, a super boost, because that's their magic items.
Right.
I guess that, like, gives it a great boost of energy.
Yeah.
So, like, that's definitely giving them the boost, but apparently it's so much of a boost that the ship can't really handle it. It's almost like ripping apart with the sheer force.
Exactly. And so, they're blasting out into outer space, but their ship is literally, it's like coming apart at the seams almost.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you see what I did there? The seams. Yeah. And so then Alana and Barr, they're like, well, our ship's not going to make it. And then Barr was like, well, you know, as my last hurrah, I'm going to just use my magic sewing powers, pretty much.
Yeah.
And he just, like, stitches the ship back together, like, with his magic.
And, like, holds it in place.
Yeah, like holds it together so they can, so it can withstand that power to get out of the gravitational pull of that time suck.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, so he does that, they're going, it's actually working.
Yeah.
And when they get out of the pool of the time suck, he collapses holding his chest, how we saw him before.
Yeah.
And you're like, no.
Not Barr.
It's like, was that too much? Was that the final thing?
Yeah.
And he looks at Hazel, because Alana runs up to him. He looks at Hazel, talks about how beautiful her eyes are. And he talks about how, like, even in his old age, you think you've seen everything. But, you know, something this beautiful I'd never seen before. And then he kind of starts saying nonsense after that.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh.
No.
And right after that, Alana says, Barr. And then he's just, you know, we actually don't even see what happens right next. We cut back to Marco and Clara coming up from the engine room.
Yeah.
And they walk into the room and you see Barr on the ground.
And Alana's, like, trying to do CPR. And then you just see Isabel and... Even Isabel was like, I'm sorry. Like, she did everything she could.
Yeah. And it's a tough scene for sure.
That was sad.
Because like we were saying, he was like coming. He already came around to this whole situation. He's like, loves the grandkid. It's just like tough to see this happen. And of course, like, he sacrifices himself just to save everybody else.
Yeah.
And Clara runs up to the body and she's, you know, terribly sad, and Marco is almost deadpan, which is never a good sign. You know that someone's going through a lot of emotion when they kind of don't even exhibit any.
Yeah.
And so Alana kind of comes up to Marco, to try to console him, and he just kind of shrugs her off and says, just please excuse us.
Yeah, like, just give us a minute.
Yeah, and even Isabel, like, kind of stops Alana from protesting anymore and just saying, you gotta let him be with his people. And you just see the scene of Clara holding, you know, Barr's dead body and Marco trying to console his mom, and it gets tough. Like, it's definitely, like, a tough scene.
So sad, man.
Yeah.
I liked Barr.
And here, another snippet of the narration, too. You have Hazel saying that she still actually has a piece of that outfit that Barr made for her. And that was, like, the last thing that he did for her.
Yeah.
So it's like, oof. Like, this is probably, like, one of the first... This is definitely the first moment in the story where you really get that big hit of emotion.
Yeah.
So, it shows that it can be, like, a fun romp, a cool action kind of thing going on, some romance and stuff, too. But when it hits those emotional beats...
Yeah, we're hashtag emotional, I think.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. it's like, and through this scene, you kind of see some flashbacks from Marco's perspective of some times that he had with his dad.
Yeah, just, like, spending time with his dad and just growing up with him and... Yeah, how much he loved him.
It was definitely like a terrible like way to end off there. And but you know, like through his sacrifice, the family and they all survived.
Yeah, they're able to get out.
Yeah, and that's actually the end of the chapter too.
Yeah. So we still don't know what's going on with that time suck.
Yeah.
They just left. They're like, we can't deal with this right now. So, yeah, but. Yeah, so then the next chapter starts, and we actually get to see Prince Robot for the first time. Mm-hmm. The first time we haven't seen him at all this volume.
Yeah.
And so you see him, and I want to say he's having a dream. Like, it starts out kind of like with that... with the will. It starts with Prince Robot, and he's in, like, some he's, like, on the battlefield, and, you know, shit's bad, and people are dying, and he's shot. Yeah, he's shot, and the medic's over there trying to, like, take care of him, and then... the medic's able to like patch him up, and then
like as the medic like finishes patching him up, you see some gas is expelled onto the battlefield, and the landfall soldiers are telling everyone, put your masks on. They all have their masks on, as you know, it's like chemical warfare at this point.
Yeah.
And you hear the medic say that they never gave her a mask.
And you're like, oh, man.
Yeah, and terrible. Yeah, and of course, like, Prince Robot, he's a robot. So
yeah, so he's immune to most things.
Yeah, so he's like, trying to console this medic, saying, like, oh, maybe, like, you're immune to it the way, and before he even finishes, like, the medic's just head explodes, and you're like...
Just explodes.
Yeah, just, like, explodes. Like, actually, not just that, like, the whole body.
Yeah, like, the body.
It's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. My God.
And when you see that this is a dream/nightmare as Prince Robot's laying in bed, you can just see, like, how traumatic all this war is to all these people. Because, you know, we saw, at the beginning of the book, we saw Marco seeing the last battle on Wreath,
mm-hmm.
and how that affected him. And you can just see, like, just how in real life, people that go through war, they really get messed up afterwards. Like, no matter how, even if you make it out alive, you still have to deal with the trauma and the pain. So, you know, he's definitely not, like, just kind of, it's not the same, like, Prince Robot that's portrayed at the beginning of the story, where he seems like the cool, like, all about it royal guy who's got everything in control.
Yeah.
There's some deep underlying things going on with his psyche.
Yeah.
So.
And I think we touched on it in the last volume, but it's cool because since he's a robot that has, like, a TV for a head.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of things, like, so when he, like, wakes up or whatever from the dream, you see that it was playing on his screen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's like it's dreams show up there, emotions will show up there. It just kind of like reflects, I guess maybe like the subconscious.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe subconscious, yeah.
But like everything else is not clearly defined. It's just kind of like.
It's a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing. And you can just infer what it is. But he actually gets a phone call.
Yeah.
That's what wakes him up.
So he gets a phone call and you assume it's probably some... police, some special agent, special forces type dude who's also inquiring about, like, hey, aren't you supposed to be fighting Alana and Marco?
Yeah.
And Prince Robot's like, I'm working on it, okay? I'm en route. I'm almost to my destination, you know? Things are moving. And the guy is like, okay, but, like, where are you going? And he's like, yeah, I'm going to Quietus because there's a famous author there, some dude, Oswald Heist.
Yeah.
who we've heard many a time before.
Oh, yeah.
And he has a hunch. He wants to see if Marco and Alana have either, if they're there or if they've been through there.
Yeah.
And the guy is like, why are you wasting your time going to some deserted planet on, like, a hunch, you know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of shitty because the special agent dude kind of, he not so subtly threatens Prince Robot.
Yeah, because he's, like, at a party because I guess what they call the president is, like, there visiting the Robot Kingdom. And it's like a whole thing because there's all these political ties,
right.
And it's like this big party, and Prince Robot's wife is there.
Yeah.
And while he's saying, he's kind of like saying, like, oh, there's a certain royal person here with a certain glow to her. Prince Robot knows that it's a very thinly veiled threat towards his wife who's carrying his baby.
Right.
So, like, that really, like, pisses Prince Robot off. And it, like, sparks him. Like, he's already going to the planet, but it really, like, drives him to make sure that he gets all this handled.
Exactly. Because he's trying to get home and see his lady and his baby, okay?
Yeah, because like we said before, he had, when the story just starts, he gets back from a tour in the war.
Right.
And he was supposed to have some R&R and spend some time with his family, and he immediately gets sent off to do this.
Right.
So he's just trying to get back. He really doesn't want to be out here doing this.
No, who wants to be in space?
Yeah. So, the call ends, and he lands on that planet, Quietus.
Yep. And so he gets out, like, he walks out of the ship, and you can see it's, like, pretty, at least where he is, there's nothing really around, you know? There's, like, a lighthouse, and then there's some little dude. What is he? Is he a bear? Is he a...
Because he looks like a little seal.
A seal.
Like
That's
a seal, but
is.
Like a humanoid. Like, he's got legs and stuff.
Yeah.
No fin, but, like, kind of
like
has
a seal
face. Yeah.
And so Prince Robot was like, point me toward wherever Heist lives.
Yeah, the author.
Yeah, the author, where he lives. And the little seal dude is like... what did he say? He was like, Heist doesn't, or he doesn't like visitors unless they're lady folk. Are you a lady folk?
Yeah, and Prince Robot, he's not the jokey kind of guy, so he's just,
no.
He's just silent, waiting for him to respond. And,
yeah.
You know, the seal guy just points to the lighthouse behind him, and as Prince Robot's heading towards the lighthouse, he's like, hey, did you bring him bottles? He likes when the lady folk bring him bottles. So it's like, this guy's having a good time, not knowing that Prince Robot is here to mess shit up.
Yeah. So Prince Robot, he gets to the lighthouse, he knocks on the door, and some Cyclops dude comes to answers. Literally a Cyclops, like, he's got one big eyeball.
Yeah.
And he was like, are you the author? And he was like, wow, I'm not used to visitors coming anymore, you know? And so you can assume that this is Heist. And, you know, he invites him in, and they get to talking. And, you know, Prince Robot's just trying to... He's just trying to scope it out. He's like, have you seen... Like, I'm looking for a dude from Wreath. May or may not be a lady with him. May not have a baby with him, you know? And Heist is like, you know, nobody's been here in so long, you know, nobody's been through here.
It's like so much so that he even thought that Prince Robot was there to get an autograph.
Yeah, because nobody ever comes to see him. Because
Prince Robot's still holding the book.
Right.
So he's like, he's like, I'll sign your book, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, but he's really there just trying to inquire about this whole situation. And it's funny because the author himself describes that particular book as a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Like, he says that, like, he just scrapped it together.
He was in it just for the paycheck.
Yeah, he filled out the word count that was necessary and then just turned it in. He was like, I'm surprised anybody even cares about that book. And, you know, they kind of get to talking. They get to talking about, you know, their past. They don't get too deep, but, you know, just kind of like just little banter here and there.
Yeah.
He talks about wife and, you know, stuff like that. And Prince Robot finds a picture.
Yeah, he sees a picture, like, on the desk or whatever.
Of like, a Cyclops guy who looks like Quietus.
Him. Yeah.
And a soldier's uniform.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, you spent some time in the military. And Quietus tells him, like, that was actually his son.
Yeah.
That was in the military. And he's like, oh, you know, what was he doing? How's he doing now? And he tells him that his son is dead.
Actually dead, yeah. And Prince Robot's like, oh man, you know, I'm sorry about that. And you think that he died in the war, but then Heist goes on to tell him that he made it through the war. Like, he survived his tour of battle, but then when he came back, he actually committed suicide.
Yeah, and it's like Prince Robot's asking this to Quietus, like almost like as he's leaving.
You mean heist?
What did I say?
Quietus, which is the planet.
Oh, the planet. Yeah. heist. So he like asks him this almost as he's leaving, like he's almost done with the conversation. He's like, oh, this is not really getting anywhere. So he like asks him like, yeah, tell me again where your son died in battle. And then he tells him that his son committed suicide, and that kind of like gives Prince Robot a pause. He's like, go on, explain more, you know? And you don't really understand why, but like maybe somebody would have some dissent against the war and the politics that be if their son who was in the military killed themselves.
Right.
So he's kind of like, now he's a little bit wary.
Yeah, trying to see like where does his loyalty lie almost in this war.
And as this conversation is kind of getting a little bit more heated.
Yeah.
Cause it's like a little tense. It's a little tense. It's like politically driven. Heist pulls out a gun from the desk and like points it at Prince Robot.
And you're just like, hello.
and it's like, talk about tense. It's getting wild.
Yeah.
And Prince Robot is just like, pretty chill about it. He's just like, all right. And, you know, the robots can, like, turn their hands into, like, cannons and blasters and stuff. So he turns his hand into a blaster and just shoots Heist in the leg.
Yeah, just blasts his kneecap off.
Yeah. And then he continues to, like, question him, too. Like, he's like, tell me, do you know of anybody that would really believe in the things that you wrote about in this book? And anybody who would be like such a fan of you? And he's like, I'm telling you, like, I don't know anything about what you're talking about.
Right.
And Heist is even asking him like, just do it already. Just kill me. Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know anything. You already blasted my knee off. This gun, by the way, it's a prop gun. I can't even do anything to you. So like, just finish it already.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, and it was kind of like, pretty dope moment where like Prince Robot like tells, like, instead of doing that, he like tells Heist like, oh, I want you to actually use your real weapon against me, and pulls his pen out of his shirt pocket.
Oh yeah.
And says, go ahead, like, and just kind of stretches out his neck towards him and says, just, you know, stab me right here, take me out, man. Prince Robot, you probably hate us anyway because of how you feel about war.
Yeah,
just go ahead and do it. And Heist just
he couldn't
he definitely thinks about it. But, you know, he just puts the pen back down and, you know. It just gets real weird, real tough. You're like, oh, man, this is probably it
for our boy Heist. So, yeah, you think that Prince Robot's just going to blast him and kill him. And, you know, looking at Prince Robot, he thought about it for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But then he was like, you know what? Instead of shooting you, I'm pretty positive Alana and Marco are going to come through here. So I'm just going to literally pull up a chair and wait.
Yeah, they'll be here eventually.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure my hunch is correct.
Yeah.
And he just pulls up the chair, like you said, and waits. And we get the narration that kicks back in.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, Hazel's always the narrator. And it says, Prince Robot was almost right. It's not that my family was coming to Quietus, the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Soon, we were already there and had been there for weeks.
Yeah. They've been there for a whole week already. A week, yeah.
And it's like, it shows the family up in the attic.
Yeah, hiding.
Hiding. And that's the end of the chapter and the end of the volume.
Oof.
So it's like, oh man, like the guy, the crazy robot guy who's chasing after them is in the same house as them.
Yeah, he's there.
Yeah. His hunch was right.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's a pretty wild way to like leave off the story right there.
Ooh. The cliffhangers.
Yeah, they do some pretty good cliffhangers for sure.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so it's like this volume was like, you know, like we were saying before, it definitely progresses the actual storyline. You know, some of these characters and storylines are really starting to converge.
Yep.
And we get a lot of like character development and, you know, past history on all these different characters. And it really leaves you like the last one left you like pretty, you know, ready for the next one, like when the grandparents show up.
Yeah.
But that wasn't like as threatening as like Prince Robot just being downstairs from the family.
Just sitting in a chair.
Yeah. So it's like you're definitely like, how's this going to turn out for them? Yeah. Is he going to find out that they're up there? What's going to happen? Yeah, what's going to happen in general? Like, you're just kind of there. And let's not forget, you know, the Will and Gwendolyn are still trying to chase after the Alana and Marco.
Yeah. And now we know that they have a way to track them because little slave girl can track the rings.
Yeah.
So you can assume that they're probably going to show up.
Yeah. And it's not like Alana and Marco would have any reason to like ditch the rings because they don't know that they're being tracked through that.
Exactly.
So it's like, you know that they're going to have it on them and they'll just continue to be tracked by them. And Prince Robot didn't even need that. He just rolled up on
them. Yeah, he just figured it out.
Yeah, so it's... This story is just, like, so much fun. It was fun, like, reading back through this volume, kind of getting back. Because we're so deep into the story by now.
Yeah. That
getting back to the beginning of where everything started.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's been pretty... It's been a fun experience doing this.
Because we've got a long road ahead of us.
Oh, yeah.
We're only on volume two. Yeah. We've got, what, 9 of them?
Yeah, if you think... You know anything. You don't know nothing about what's going on.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Yeah.
Okay? Nothing.
It's like, stuff only gets more wild. It just, like, if this kind of story interests you, you know, like, it's just going to be more of this, better.
Yes.
It gets deeper, more complicated.
Yes.
But like I said.
That's a good word.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, at this point, though, like, if you're listening to this one, hopefully you've already, like, been reading, you're into the story
yeah.
by now. But if not, you know, like, what are you doing?
It's not too late. You can pick up volume 3
yeah.
and just start reading.
Yeah,
it's not too late.
Just start reading it. And we're basically going to say this like every episode that
yeah.
we do this, because we just want, like, this is a huge franchise. A lot of people love it.
Yes.
But I just want to, like, get more people on it that maybe have never heard of it.
Yes.
Because it's, like, it's just, like, if any of this interests you, you should just hop on it, because it's definitely fun. And like we said, even in this volume, you get the emotional stuff coming out, too. You can see where you can really get your heartstrings pulled.
Exactly.
And that's volume 2.
Yeah. And the thing that I feel like is really... I don't know, approachable about Saga is the fact that it is a comic. So you get, I feel like you get a lot of this character development and the story that you would in like a dense novel,
mm-hmm.
but you're reading like a sixth of the pages. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because a lot of it is illustrated, a lot of it is context clues of what's going on the page.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you still get that experience of a deep story.
Yeah.
But without having to like commit to a long book.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. like, you're definitely going to spend some time like reading it,
yeah,
and really like you said, just looking into everything, trying to see everything in the background of the images. But honestly, like, I like reread through this thing in like less than an hour, just because, you know, of course I know everything that was going on,
right?
But just kind of like skimming through everything, like, it's not a long ordeal.
Yeah.
So even if you're not like the reading type,
right,
you should definitely get on this, especially because, let's be real, like, this thing is so good and so much fun that odds are this will eventually get turned into something, whether it's like a TV show
yeah.
or whatever. So just be one of those guys that you can tell your friends, like, ooh, I knew that shit, like, before it even came out.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's definitely worth it.
I agree.
Yeah.
Go read Saga.
Please.
Please.
Just give them your money. And
give Brian K. Vaughan your money already.
Yeah, give them your money. And then, you know, come back. We're gonna do the next volume just like this. It's like, I hope you guys enjoy this as much as we enjoy doing it.
I just love Saga.
Oh, yeah. It's so much fun. And then now that we're getting back into it, like, refreshing, it's like, now it's like all I think about is Saga again.
Yeah.
So I'm like right back into the belly of the beast.
Exactly.
Yeah, so.
So, guys, let us know what you thought. Follow me everywhere. I'm on everything. On Instagram, I think I'm just Almost Well-Versed. Follow me on Twitter, AW Podcast. I've been trying to be a little more active on Twitter, like what I'm currently reading. Like, I was talking about Mistborn the other day, how I was almost done with Mistborn 4. Yeah, oof, we can't even talk about Mistborn.
Oh, yeah, that's another episode.
Next. But, yeah, and if you haven't seen me on YouTube, I know this podcast, you can find it everywhere, you know, Spotify, iTunes, whatever, but I also upload it to YouTube in case you don't like Spotify. I don't know.
It's like, however you want to listen to things, it's on there.
Yeah.
So just find your favorite way to do it.
It's available.
On it. Yeah, just, you know, support the podcast. It's so much fun doing it. you know, granted, I'm only on it every once in a while, but, you know, I have a great amount of fun doing it. And it's just, like, rewarding when, you know, people listen to it, give some comments, give feedback, kind of get involved. So I was like, just like, send your thoughts, how you're feeling about everything, the podcast itself, the stuff that we're talking about. And, hey, tell us if you pick it up and been reading it with us.
Yeah.
Like, tell us how you feel about it.
Yeah. So. And if you have any recommendations, like, I'm always open to recommendations on what to read, you know. I mean, I did Red Dead last week, or last time, so it can be anything.
Yeah, it could, if it has a story, we can do it.
Yeah.
So just let us know what you guys want, and
we'll do it.
Yeah, we'll be back.
And, well, like I said, thanks for tuning in this week, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.